Customs and Border Protection Chief Gil Kerlikowske wants his troops to be more innovative. Turning that wish into reality falls squarely on the shoulders of the agency's IT and acquisition executives. Mark Borkowski is the brain power on the acquisition side of this innovation challenge. He's Assistant Commissioner and Chief Acquisition Executive in CBP's Office of Technology Innovation and Acquisition. He joins our executive editor, Jason Miller, live at the National Contract Management Association's 33rd Annual Government Contract Management Symposium, and they're there to discuss the innovation strategy. Over to you, Jason.
Thanks, Emily. Now, Mark, we're going to pick your brain a little bit, as they say, about this innovation strategy. I had the joy of talking to Charlie Armstrong, your partner in crime in many respects. He's the CIO at CBP. Just last week, we did an Ask the CIO online chat, a little self-promotion for you. And one of the things he said to me was, he talked about this innovation strategy and said, you know, the commissioner said, we want you guys to be more innovative. And he goes, I'm partnering with your office, Mark Borkowski's office. And so I'm glad you're here because it's kind of both ends. So let's talk about that strategy. I know it's still a little bit early in the process, but just give me the 50,000 foot view.
Well, the 50,000 foot view is, how do we get innovation as a culture to catch? You know, there are a lot of things you can do with innovation that are specific projects, but what you want them to do is you want them to catch, and you want momentum, so you want it to be self-starting and self-maintaining. So in addition to the kinds of things that Mr. Armstrong, our CIO, does, where he looks at things like mobility and information technology as enablers for technology, for innovation, we're trying to extend that to everything, processing, how we do acquisitions. And we believe that the way to do that is to empower the workforce, which means we have to get risk acceptance, risk tolerance, encouraging people to take initiative. So the strategy basically starts with find some small projects that we can do innovation on and use them to catch, to catalyze the change in culture, to encourage people to innovate, to encourage people to take risks, and then to have executives who cover that risk taking.
And I think that's a key point, cover the risk taking.
Yes.
We was at another conference last week when we talked about how to get people to be more innovative, and the risk, the top cover is key. I want to touch back to that in a second, but you also talked about empower the workforce, some small starts. I know you're still going through that process, but can you give me an example or something that maybe would fall from a broad view of what a small innovative start would be?
I'll give you a really simple, small example that we thought was kind of interesting. We send groups of our people, our assistants, our staff assistants, our administrative people, every once in a while on a visit to the border because we want them to understand that they contribute to the mission. And at one point, they started coming back to me with their debriefs. And one team came back and said, you know, we were out at a port, and there was a camera that broke, and we put up a new camera. And the port folks said, why'd you put the camera up on that pole? We wish you had asked us. We wish you had put it on a different pole. And they looked at me and said, boy, that was a big deal to them. I said, well, fix it. And the staff of basically fairly junior people looked at me and said, what? I said, you just created a network of people. Go fix it. About a month later, I was talking to my staff about this. I said, this is the thing, kind of things we want to encourage, and I gave them that example. When I got back to my office, I had an email from folks who said, oh, we never bothered to tell you, but we fixed it. Right? And this is junior people who didn't realize they had authority, but were felt empowered and just went off and did it and didn't even feel a need to report back, which I thought was wonderful. So you want to that's a very, very small thing. A larger thing is how we got aerostats on the southwest border in Rio Grande Valley. We had folks who were working with the Department of Defense. I told them, go make it happen. Next thing I knew, the things were up. So those are the kinds of examples of things that we want to use, and we want to build on those going forward.
Now, the top cover is very important. You hear time and again the risk aversion in the government. And one of the reasons that this happens is because when the person or the group gets taken to the woodshed or something right. doesn't go exactly 100% right, you get congressional and auditors. You've been through a lot of wars. You know, on your back is a lot of SBI net scars.
Right.
Are you feel like you're in that position that you can give them the top cover, or are you even getting the top cover from your bosses and their bosses all the way to the top of the commissioner at CBP?
Right. I certainly feel I can give my people top cover, and what I'm trying to do is demonstrate that I'm willing to do that because the workforce tends not to believe that executives will take those kinds of risks. So I feel I can. I think what's very interesting in CBP is there's an awareness of our bosses, my bosses, that they want this innovation, and they know that that means we have to have some kind of risk-taking environment and risk coverage. So what Mr. Armstrong and I are trying to do is actually build a more corporate process so that our bosses can cover us.
We're speaking with Mark Borkowski, the Customs and Border Protection Assistant Commissioner and Chief Acquisition Executive. I'm Jason Miller from the 33rd Annual Government Contract Management Symposium. Mark, let me shift gears a second. I think top cover is important, but then you also have to empower the acquisition workforce, another key part of this. acquisition workforce is such a big challenge. We talk about training and right. and the bathtub effect right. of the age. What's happening with CBP's acquisition workforce from your perspective?
Actually, I think it's gotten a lot better, a lot stronger. We've spent a lot of time developing acquisition program managers. And when I see them brief me now compared to, say, 2 years ago, it's incredible. I think we have some world-class people. I think the challenge going forward is creating opportunities for them. And what I mean by that is you have to have places for people to grow to. It's one thing to develop people as they're in, kind of early in their career, but you have to have promotion opportunities. You have to have programs. You have to have big opportunities. With the budgets and sequestration and hiring freezes, that's been very, very difficult to do, and we're hoping that that'll start to open up going forward.
When you talk about the training opportunities, is there things that you're doing from a training perspective that maybe is different, is taking in the fact that the budget is tight?
Right.
I mean, there's a ton of virtual training out there. We know right. that. But what are you guys doing to really hone in on the training so people feel like I'm not just, oh, okay, here we go again, FAR Part 15, great, right. I got it.
Well, and frankly, that kind of training, which is the classroom kind of training, the virtual web-based training, is fine. But what we need is on-the-job training. We need experience. So what we've been trying to work on is experience. And what that sometimes means is that the senior leaders in the acquisition community have to spend a lot of one-on-one time with the junior people, and we do that. I have, for example, in my office, I have them regularly brief me, and sometimes those are, you know, very difficult experiences, but that's how I was raised. I remember those nights where I couldn't get to sleep because I was briefing the boss. We're doing that. But the other thing we're trying to do is create opportunities for people to do details and temporary assignments so they get some breadth of experience in other programs, and to the degree we can, even transfer them into larger programs. We've had some success in that, but this is not just about classroom. The thing that we've really lacked, in my opinion, has been hands-on experience with these things and good guidance and leadership and mentoring from more experienced people.
Are you finding that you have enough people to move people from point A to point B even for 6 months or 3 months or 3 weeks? Because what I hear time and again is that the desks are so piled with papers, if you will, the work is so, workload is so heavy that I can't afford to lose Mark Borkowski right, right. for a week or a day. Right. Are you able to how are you deal with that?
We don't have enough people, but the need to move people is so important that we take the penalty on the backlog of work and we move them anyway. So, no, we don't have enough people to do this, but not to do it is so short-sighted that we'll take the penalty on letting the paperwork pile up.
And what about from a hiring perspective, are you guys able to find people that to meet your needs, and are you hiring just at the entry level, or are you able to bring in some mid-managers?
We can bring in mid-managers when hiring opens up, and we find that there are a lot of those people available. So it's not a problem of finding the talent. It's a problem of getting the authorizations, opening up the slots, being very, very careful about how you do that. So we're just starting now to get back to the point where we can hire, and oftentimes our positions are GS-14, GS-15 experience positions. You have a little bit of a balancing act that you do with when is the right time to bring somebody from the outside and when is the right time to make sure you focused on growth potential for your own workforce. So you have to do that kind of a deliberation. But we have both entry level and we have more senior people. One of the great programs that DHS has is a really wonderful internship program. It's called the ACPC, Acquisition Career Professional something. Where we bring in contracting specialists, we bring in system engineers, we bring in acquisition program managers. And DHS, has the chief procurement officer, funds those for 3 years. It's a three-year development. You come out of this as a GS-12, and they allocate a certain number of those based on our request to each component of CBP. That's been a tremendously successful program that's brought in tremendously talented people, and we continue to operate with that.
Mark, we're just about out of time, but I can't let you go without asking about the technology and the situation on the secure border efforts right, that it's right. going on. You've been through the wars with SBINet and other programs. Give me a sense, where are you guys at now with that whole, how can we apply better technology to right, secure the border?
Right. Well, and as you recall, when we left SBINet, where we actually did deploy in two AORs, two areas of response behind the border, the technology works very well. But we substituted that for a non-developmental menu of options. And that had a whole series of technologies. Almost all of those are now under contract. They've all gone under contract. That's significant cost reduction compared to estimates. And many of them are fully deployed. So the mobile surveillance capability are all out there. The remote video surveillance system, which are cameras, that started its deployment, had some very successful testing. The high end of this, the controversial one, the integrated fixed tower, is on contract, back on track, and we're beginning the construction and deployment activities of that. So it has taken a while to get here, but those programs are now well underway, and right now the signs are very promising.